Well, hello once more. Welcome back to the Tottenham Way. I'm Marcus Buckland, and I am still smiling after Sunday. It goes without saying that this show is all about you know who. He's one of our own. He's one in a million, and he has become Tottenham's record goal scorer. You know what he's done. You know just how good he is. And we are now going to revel over some of Harry Kane's greatest exploits. What are his best moments for the club? Which goals stand out? And will surpassing Jimmy Greaves' club record have any bearing on his future? We'll also assess that win against Manchester City, and there will be more Hot Take Lane back again, apparently by popular demand. On the panel, once more, our trio of Tottenham journalists, Dan Kilpatrick of the Evening Standard. Good evening, Dan.
Good evening, Marcus.
Tom Allnutt from The Times is here again. Hi, Tom.
Hi there. Dan was shaking his head there as you were saying we're going to do Hot Take Lane. So I'm wondering, is he not prepared or?
I haven't done Hot Take Lane. I'm going to be honest. I wanted to do it and dedicate it to the press office who told us at the game on Sunday, they didn't like Hot Take Lane, so I thought we should keep doing it for that reason alone. But sadly, I haven't had time today, so we might be able to slip it in at the end on a kind of extra recording, but for now, assume it's not happening.
We backed the game against all opposition, and now you're throwing it back in our faces.
What a shame. I mean, you did write it. You wrote it during the last podcast, so you can multitask. Okay, well, we might have Hot Take Lane, and hopefully we won't. So that's Tom Allnutt, Tom A for the rest of this podcast, and Tom B, Tom Barkley from The Sun is also here. Hello, Tom.
Hi, Marcus. It sounds like Tottenham controlling Dan again, it sounds like, from the Hot Take Lane being taken out. What a shame.
He's been muted.
He has Daniel Levy muted. Did have a word and said he wasn't really into it, the one I made up about him last time. Could I please stop it? And obviously, I listened to my paymaster. So.
Yes, that is poor. Now, we also wanted to get a view from the stands as well as the press box. So joining us for this podcast, I'm delighted to say, is Lucy Jones, who has been a season ticket holder at Tottenham for many years. She is receiving therapy. But first things first, Lucy, where do you sit in this wonderful new ground?
Oh, I'm in the big old job. What do we call that, by the way? Just the south stand?
Yeah. Park Lane.
No, we now call it the big old job. And who over the years, I mean, we're going to talk about one player in particular, so this may be an obvious question, but who has been your favourite player of all time?
Well, not of all time, but I'm so devastated that we got rid of Moussa Dembélé. I think it's one of the biggest mistakes we ever made as a club. So I'm still crying over that. But I just love Harry. I do love Son. But Klinsmann, he is my boy, I have to say.
I'll never forget that first celebration when Klinsmann joined the club and all that thing about him being a diver, et cetera, it was one of the best bits of PR in the history of English football, I reckon.
Well, and when he came back as well.
Yeah, I mean, he was a genius. Have you got one outstanding game above all others that when you're feeling a bit down in the dumps, you either play on DVD or just think about again?
Yeah, do you know what? It was actually 2014 Europa League. When Hazard went in goal, if that does not cheer everyone up, I don't know what will. We're winning 5-0, and then Hugo gets sent off. Harry in goal, has a good shot, wasn't very good, was he?
No. But you know, it was a memory. And have you got a favourite journalist? No, I'm not going to ask you that. We've got three excellent journalists. We don't want to cause any problems on that front.
It'll be Alistair Gold for sure.
Oh dear. We're also going to be talking to Paul Coit, who interviewed Sir Harry on the pitch immediately after the final whistle as the full extent of his achievement started to sink in. And Coity is quite a character, so he'll be worth listening to. But Dan, we're going to be Kane-centric, of course. Just looking at the game as a whole, it was a terrific win. It was a terrific team effort as well. Who stood out in particular for you?
I think, as you say, Marcus, it was a team effort. I mean, obviously, it was Kane's day, but it really felt like every single player to a man carried out the game plan perfectly. It was a kind of classic and quintessential Conte performance, albeit Conte wasn't there and hadn't been there all week, which was a strange thing. But I think it was pretty hard to single out individuals. I mean, everyone gave a lot of credit to Emerson Royale, which I agreed with. It was a great kind of engaging battle with Grealish, I thought. He didn't always come off on top because Grealish played very well, but he really put in a great shift and kind of epitomised the spirit and grit of Spurs. And I think it was probably the best and most complete performance of the season, really. And we haven't seen much like that since the back end of last year. So I think, yeah, all around really encouraging. I mean, a word for Song, because he looked threatening again, and signs that maybe Preston was the turning point that we all kind of hoped it was for him when we were talking in last week's pod. So yeah, loads and loads of positives. And we've just got to hope that Conte doesn't kind of come back and turn the mood really sour again and it all gets rubbish. Maybe Cellini needs to stay in the job. I think he's now deputised for Conte five times at Spurs and Inter and won all five games.
So, hang on. No, you've upset everyone in behind the scenes. You've upset Daniel Levy. Now you've upset Antonio Conte. You better be careful here. But I'm so pleased for Emerson Royale because he has had a lot of sticks. Some of it's deserved. But he's wanted to stay. He has fought. He's shown great mental strength. And that was a terrific performance from him. Obviously, Tom B, City had a lot of the ball. But is it fair to say that Spurs certainly deserved to win the match?
Yeah, I think so. Definitely. I mean, City, as you said, had a lot of the ball, but didn't do that much with it. They didn't have a lot of threats. I mean, I don't really know why Kevin De Bruyne didn't start. It seems like he often doesn't start at the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium. But having said that, even when he came on, he added a bit more creativity, but not that much. Haaland was shackled throughout the game. I think one touch in Spurs' box, pretty incredible from Tottenham's point of view. Hats off to Stellini. I mean, two of the biggest wins this season he's had to take charge of, the Marseille game away from home. And one of the players we didn't mention, Emerson definitely stands out, but Pierre-Emile Højbjerg, I mean, wow, what a performance. He was just sensational, obviously set up the goal. Just Højbjerg at his best, the way he sort of marshals that midfield and sets the tone and gets right into the opposition. I thought he was fantastic. And it was just a performance that got back to what made Spurs so successful last season. That's now, I think, five clean sheets in seven. Just mad considering it feels like 5 minutes ago we were talking about 21 goals conceded in 10 games. But if they can turn that around and get that defensive form back again, we know how exciting and how dangerous their attacking players are, particularly with Son, as Dan said, coming back into the fold. So it's all looking very positive.
Well, it is. And I don't wish to bring anybody down at this stage. However, I've got two asterisks which I need to address. And first of all, Tom A, I think back to last season and Spurs win 3-2 at Manchester City. Harry Kane is magnificent. We're looking great. 4 days later, they go and lose at Burnley. So is this going to be another one-off win, or is this going to be the start of something special?
Well, I guess against City, it never feels like a one-off win these days. You know, Spurs have such a strangely, bizarrely good record against Manchester City. Every time they play against them, they seem to play brilliantly. Kane has a stormer and City seem to find a way not to win or score. Or, I mean, obviously, they won a couple of weeks ago, but in general, Spurs play well against City. I felt there was quite a lot in this game to take away a lot of optimism really for Spurs. You know, I think they, it now feels like they have a squad suddenly, which I think is a massive part of why they struggled so much in the first few months of the season. They got a lot of players back, which means that there's suddenly competition for places again, which we saw obviously in Emerson's performance, but also it means they got options to bring off the bench. I mean, for so long in those first few months, it felt like Conte had nothing really to bring on to change the game or to defend a lead or anything. And he has those options now. And I think, like Tom said, I think the defence is suddenly looking like it's just finding a little bit of solidity again, a bit of confidence. That's three clean sheets in a row. We know that, you know, Conte has said recently how much Spurs have to tighten up if they want to kind of get back to the basics like they were last season, that kind of guts organisation, digging in, grinding out results. And I think those two things, having that squad back, those options, and having a solid foundation again, I think stands them in pretty good stead. You know, there's been a lot of talk recently about Tottenham kind of making the second half of the season, you know, better than the first. And I feel like this was possibly the game we might look back on and say, yeah, that was the one that turned the tide a little bit.
Well, I hope so. The other asterisk, and Lucy, this one is for you, the elephant in the room. As wonderful as it was to beat Manchester City, what it did mean, of course, was that any Arsenal fan who you might know was WhatsApping you and saying, thanks very much indeed, really appreciate the favour. Are there any mixed feelings at all that we may have gone a long way towards giving the Gooners the title?
You know what? The Arsenal equivalent of Paul Coit messaged me and tweeted me and Instagrammed me, and he's blocked now. You know what? It's really annoying, though, because can't they see that they stumbled. It was City's opportunity. City stumbled. So actually City did them the favour. And I also think they should be a little bit scared. I heard some people talking on the train today and they were saying, I'm scared about Tottenham. And I was sitting there thinking, yes, I wasn't wearing this at the time. I'm wearing a Tottenham top at the moment. But I think they're a bit frightened because this is the stage where we kick on, as you said, Tom A. I mean, last 16, top five and fifth round of the FA Cup. This time last season, we wouldn't believe this or at the beginning of the season. So I think they're frightened of us, you know. It's feeling amazing, but the worst bit is they're top of the league. Mm. It's horrible, isn't it?
Yeah, and of course City are now imploding all the headlines about the various financial things that they're in trouble about. So it does seem to be shifting in Arsenal's favour, but who knows? They can stumble. We're not that
far off.
They did
stumble.
Yeah, they did stumble. They looked very ordinary, didn't they? So who knows? And sadly, Manchester United, I think you can still get odds of 14-1 on them winning the title. I mean, they're quietly sitting nicely placed. But this is not a Manchester United podcast, so we won't go into any more details about that. What we are going to go into is the details of the great Harry Kane, who has now scored 267 goals for Spurs, as we all know, to finally eclipse Jimmy Greaves. 200 of those coming in the Premier League, and he's managed that in 304 games, which is two fewer than Alan Shearer and a hell of a lot fewer than Wayne Rooney, who took 462 games to get to 200. 15 FA Cup goals, only 7 in the League Cup. Perhaps you could argue that he's underperformed a little in the League Cup, but I'm nitpicking. 21 Champions League goals, 18 in the Europa League, 6 in the Conference League. Of course, he was the first ever man to score a hat-trick in the Conference League. It won't be the thing that he's remembered about, but it's yet another wonderful statistic. So, Tom A, where do we start with the great man?
Yeah, I mean, I was kind of thinking about this with Kane, and I think so much of his best moments for Spurs, it feels like kind of came in those first 2 or 3 years. I don't know whether that's because that was when he was still a huge revelation. He was such a huge surprise. You know, everyone was, who is this guy who is called Harry Kane, who doesn't really look much like a footballer? He's had 2 or 3 years on various loans at clubs and he hasn't looked much good. Why is he suddenly, you know, delivering these incredible amount of goals in such a short space of time? So I sort of feel like the kind of the most momentous moments for Kane were the ones when he was exploding onto the scene. And that's not to kind of underestimate anything that he's done in the last 3 or 4 years. But I really felt like those kind of first couple of years were when the real kind of statements were made. And I mean, it's funny because I think one of the ones that really always sticks out in my mind was that goal against Aston Villa, the free kick in 2014, which actually was a pretty rubbish goal. I mean, it was a deflection. I'm not sure. I think the keeper would have had it covered if it hadn't deflected in. But it was just the way that it was a last minute winner. It was really kind of the goal that cemented Kane's place in the team in terms of Pochettino's kind of Premier League team. Before then, he'd been scoring goals in the cup and he'd been coming off the bench. But it's easy to forget now that Pochettino actually started with Adebayor at the start of that 14-15 season. He was still kind of really putting his bets on, you know, turning Adebayor around and getting the best out of him. And it was only when Kane scored that goal against Villa that Pochettino actually thought, OK, I need to put my faith in this guy now. And that's always felt like, I think, the goal when Kane really sort of announced himself in terms of getting into the starting lineup. After that, I mean, I think, you know, Kane spoke after the match yesterday a lot about, you know, his two goals against Chelsea on New Year's Day 2015, which was a year later. I mean, he obviously had an incredible season that first Pochettino in that season. And I think that, but he scored a lot of goals against fairly sort of lower end teams in cups, in Europa League, against kind of bottom tier sides in the Premier League. That double against Chelsea on New Year's Day, and Chelsea were flying at the time, you know, right at the top of the league. And he really just, you know, he tore them apart. Spurs won 4-3. The first goal was a brilliant drive where he cut in off the left. And his second goal, you know, he turned, I think it was something like Ivanovic or something. He turned him in the box and then fired it into the corner. And I think those two goals were just a real sort of statement of, okay, we've seen now Kane is a fixture in Tottenham's starting lineup, but he can also do it against one of the best teams at the time in Europe, against one of the best managers, Jose Mourinho, against one of the best defences, John Terry, etc. And I think for him personally and for everyone else, we all sort of thought, blimey, this guy is actually here to stay. And then it was only, I think, about a month later in February when we had that header against Arsenal, which I think, you know, was such a momentous moment. At White Hart Lane, it was still very early days for Kane, his first derby. it was sort of Bentaleb and Mason in midfield. It was early days for Pochettino. It was early days in the Pochettino era. So it was kind of like almost like a bit of a parallel between Kane's own trajectory and the kind of Pochettino trajectory.
Mm.
And him scoring that header, you know, in the last minute, just sort of hanging in the air and looping it into the corner, you know, setting the whole stadium into kind of pandemonium. I think those three moments for me were the ones that really stood out in his first couple of years, because they were the ones that kind of said, Harry Kane has arrived.
Yeah. Yeah, Dan's quite right. 5-3. We mustn't do ourselves out of a goal against Chelsea. It was 5-3 on New Year's Day. Am I right in saying, boys, by the way, that free kick, which was not a great free kick, remains the only free kick Kane has ever scored for Spurs?
Yes, he scored as many direct free kicks as Paul Robinson.
Is that right?
Yeah. And he's on a run now. He's on a run of something like, I think it was Brentford away, which was the first game after the World Cup. I think he reached 50 free kick attempts without scoring, which was the biggest run at the moment, unsurprisingly. And yet he keeps going. I don't really understand why. It's amazing to me that someone who's so good technically in so many ways can't take a free kick, but still seems to continue to be given the opportunity to do so. It's quite baffling.
So in this instance, if at first you do succeed, fail, fail again thereafter. But we won't hold that against him either. Now, Tom B has been speaking to the Shamrock Rovers goalkeeper, Richard Brush. And you may think, why? Well, because Richard Brush was the first ever goalkeeper to concede a goal to Harry Kane. It was his first for Spurs.
So I'm here with Richard Brush. Richard, great to speak to you. You were the first goalkeeper to concede a goal against Harry Kane all those years ago for Shamrock Rovers. What do you remember of the game?
You know, honestly, not a whole lot now. Obviously, from the time, I don't remember a whole lot, but now with everything that's gone on, obviously, with Harry breaking the record for the goals he scored, I've watched it over a couple more times than I would have done if he hadn't, I suppose. I remember it not being a worldie, unfortunately. It'd be nice to be sort of remembered for having no chance. I've only had much chance. It was a bit of a tapping, a bit of a clinical finish for him. But it'd be nice if he'd have been on in the top corner against me and I had some mad dollars to get after it. But unfortunately, the fairy tale's his and not mine. So that's the way it goes. But it's nice to be sort of a footnote in somebody's career, especially obviously that's gone on to achieve massive things and you know, extraordinary his caliber. So it's nice to be a little footnote in that. And I'm enjoying it a bit more now. It's come to fruition and come to life.
For sure. He actually referenced that goal after breaking the record the other day, talking back about his first goal he ever scored. It must be quite enjoyable in a way to be that very difficult quiz question for Tottenham fans over who was the man to concede the first goal against Harry Kane.
Exactly, especially when you look at some of the goalkeepers and some of the teams he's played against and the goalkeepers he's scored against. 3-1 to be, you know, against a relative nobody, and leave, I'd probably say 97% of football fans stumped, 98% of football. It's nice to be that sort of bit of a out there answer to somebody that's, you know, so well known and already prolific.
So he has played a small part in the Harry Kane story. He's a remarkable individual himself, and you can understandably, Tom, you're going to cling on to a connection with Harry Kane, even if you didn't actually cover yourself in glory at the time.
Yeah, absolutely. And he very much embraces being that obscure, very difficult to answer quiz question of who was the first man to concede a goal to Harry Kane, and I fully support him in that in that.
It's amazing that goal against Shamrock Rovers came in 2011. I mean, it just shows how long a lead up Kane had. I mean, you think those goals that I was talking about there, 2014 was his free kick against Villa. And he'd already scored his first goal 3 years before. I mean, Kane had been around a long time. I think that was sort of part of the reason why people kind of took quite a long time to get used to him, to kind of really get behind him, because it felt like, yeah, we know Kane. He's been around for 3 or 4 years. We know he's not very good, you know. But and so when he actually did start scoring goals, he sort of had a lot of sort of ground to make up almost.
Lucy, was there a moment when you suddenly realised that this slightly gangly young fella who'd been sent out on loan left, right and centre had a chance of becoming a major player in the Tottenham story?
Well, I think, you know, you realise that his favourite opponent seems to be Leicester. Because he went there, didn't he? And I think he scored whilst he played for Millwall against Leicester. And then he scored most against Leicester for us.
Yes.
So he scored, I think, 19 times in 18 games against Leicester. So I think you're like, okay, this guy's pretty good. My favourite moment was in 2017, White Hart Lane, the last day. North London derby. The last North London derby. That was awesome when he scored that. And I was there for his 100th goal at Anfield. Wanyama Thunder Buster. Do you remember that?
Yes.
2-2 game. Harry missed a penalty and then scored a last minute penalty. His 100th goal. It seems absolutely bonkers now that he's doubled that.
It's extraordinary. In a moment, we will attempt to list his top five goals. I'm not sure if we'll reach unanimous agreement on it, but I keep thinking, oh yeah, that one. I mean, the penalty, okay, it's a penalty, but that one at Liverpool showed incredible mental strength as well. So it's going to be difficult, but we will list the top five. But from the stands, back to the pitch, and Dan has been speaking to Paul Coity, as everybody knows him. He's worked for the club for a number of years. And as soon as the final whistle blew on Sunday, he was on the pitch to have a word with the record breaker. And he's been talking to Dan about that.
So, Coity, you were obviously on the pitch at full time with Harry.
Yep.
Just a flavour of what that was like, the atmosphere down there.
Well, even before the game, I thought the atmosphere was unbelievable. It was the noise in the ground. I think everybody was up for it. The players were up for it. It was just, I felt it was something was going to happen. It was just such a great atmosphere. So then it was said, look, we're going to do the interview. I mean, we discussed this over the past few weeks, is that should Harry break it at home, then we'll be able to do something. And obviously, you've got to play it by ear because, you know, should we lose? You don't want to do it. And whether Harry would be up for it. But it was almost like the perfect storm. You know, it was the champions. Harry scores the winning goal. And so it was all systems go. So literally, I think it was 5 minutes before the game ended, then I sort of came downstairs all ready to go. So we're just thinking, please don't score. Please don't let Man City score. So it's going to ruin everything. And then away we went. And the atmosphere, it was just unbelievable. There's something about going in. I mean, it's only players get to do it. I'm just so lucky to stand in the middle of that pitch and look around and hear the noise. And for me, being a Spurs fan all my life, it was just the most surreal thing. And then have Harry Kane come up, and I've known Harry for a long time. But to be able to do that, it was just an incredible honour, not only to do for as a Spurs fan, to be there for that moment and speak to Harry, who, and I think you agree and everybody agrees, it's just that, you know, he's just the perfect professional. He's such a decent man. He's a great player, and there's nothing I could ever say bad about him. So the atmosphere was great, and it was just an amazing thing to be able to do, Dan.
So to be clear, if City equalised, do you think it still would have happened as it did? I mean, obviously you said if they'd have lost, it might have taken place. If it was a kind of heartbreaking, Grealish 95th minute equaliser,
I don't know.
It would have gone ahead?
I honestly don't know. I was ready for it. You know, it really depends on the mood. And obviously in a situation like that, you have to judge the mood of the stadium and judge the mood of the fans. So there's no point saying whether it was or whether it wasn't, because I honestly don't know. I was ready for that. If it had been pulled, then maybe. And if it was like we were all desperately upset about it. But I think even a draw against Man City, we wouldn't have been too unhappy with. You know, if we'd conceded three maybe in that last couple of minutes, then maybe it would have been different. But it wasn't. So it was perfect. So it's not even worth thinking about. Thank goodness it didn't happen anyway.
I suppose the funny thing about that game is there would have been people that wouldn't have been too unhappy if Spurs had lost it, given what it would have done to us.
Can you imagine the interview would have been, okay, Harry, we were winning, but we lost. But then again, you know, it's good for us because of the Arsenal. But, you know, it was never going to happen.
Kane's credit, and I don't think there are many professional footballers that think like this, but Kane absolutely would not have seen that point of view. He's such a competitor.
I didn't either, but I don't know about you, Dan. I honestly didn't either. There's always been there's the talk around of, oh, we're doing Arsenal a favour. They can do their own thing. Let's leave it to them. If they're going to win it or if they're going to screw it up, that's over to them. We want to win every game. We've got a big season ahead of us. So it's very important that we go out and win it.
I couldn't agree more. But actually, if you look at what happened in the City game last year, that result could kickstart Spurs' season, and there's still a lot to play for.
100%.
Let's get back to Harry. He was really emotional. I mean, it looked to me like he was almost on the verge of tears. I mean, was that the impression
interviewing him? Yeah, it was. He was very emotional. And I think, you know what, the thing that I noticed probably when he was more emotional was the Danny Greaves video. Now, Danny, who's obviously the son of the late, great Jimmy Greaves, and recorded this. And it was a lovely touch. And it was his message to Harry from, you know, the family, from the Greaves family, and how his dad felt about him. And it was interesting because just as we cut to that, and I said, well, you know, let's hear from Danny, that's when all the other players, I don't know whether they thought the interview was over, and they jumped on Harry. And although they were all sort of, and even Hugo's on him there, and Harry's gone, no, hang on. And it was, he not only wanted to see this because he wanted to hear what Danny had to say to him, but I think as a mark of respect to Jimmy as well, which was very evident when he just said, look, no. And he moved forward and he moved away from me, moved away from the players. And he stood and he watched and listened to every word. And he was definitely moved by, I mean, I was moved by that. And I think he definitely was. And it was interesting the fact that he said, whether the whole thing's actually going to settle in or he's going to realize what he's actually achieved. I mean, we've known this is going to happen for quite some time, but there was certainly emotion there, and he was taking it in and looking around and realizing the magnitude of what he's achieved, because it is remarkable. You know, all this stuff about, oh yeah, but Jimmy Greaves scored two goals in the Charity Shield, that would have been back in 1967. This record, I've been talking about this 266 for as long as I've been a Spurs fan. So whether it's two extra, it really does not make any difference whatsoever, because those two are going to be scored. So as far as I'm concerned, the record's his, and so, so well deserved as well. Because what stands out is what a great player and what a decent guy, because for me, he has not changed as a person, which is incredible considering everything that he's been through and everything that's been handed to him and how everybody looks at him. But he's still the same decent lad he always was.
Well, Coity is not lacking in passion, is he, Dan? And he actually captured that moment magnificently, I thought.
Yeah, it was a great moment. And Coity, you heard him there. Oh, in fact, I don't think you did hear him there, but he, in a kind of first attempt that we didn't use, he compared the atmosphere and the kind of occasion to the final day at White Hart Lane. I don't think he used it in the version there, but I thought that was quite apt. It felt similarly kind of like a moment where everyone just kind of came together. You know, back in May 2017, it was kind of coming together to say goodbye to the stadium and kind of celebrate that unbeaten season with a great team. And obviously on Sunday, it was everyone coming together to just, yeah, celebrate Kane and Tottenham's greatest modern player, if not greatest player. So it felt kind of similarly communal in that sense. Obviously it was handled very well, and a really nice moment, and I think obviously helped by the fact that Spurs won. As Coity said, it would have been slightly awkward had City done what they did in the second half at the Etihad. So yeah, I think to pick up Tom's point from earlier, I think not just the match, but the sense of occasion could be very significant for the second half of the season. I mean, everyone knows that the club has felt fractured since the turn of the year. You know, the fans have been, or a section of the fans have been calling for Daniel Levy's head. Conte hasn't appeared necessarily on the same page as the club. And perhaps Sunday can help provide that kind of thread of unity from sort of boardroom through the team, through the manager to the terraces. Because I think without that, I think Spurs will struggle to succeed. But that there were certainly signs that was returning, I felt.
Well, we are approaching his top five. But before that, Tom B, I mean, he's obviously scored a spectacular number of goals. Probably fair to say not that many of them have been spectacular. There have obviously been some great moments. But looking in more detail, in technical terms, what are we picking at? Because clearly he is a wonderfully technical player.
He is. And as you know, I'm not a Spurs fan. I'm only recent covering Tottenham. So I wanted to refresh my memory over all the goals he scored, and watched a compilation earlier of literally every single one of his 267. There's a couple of goals I want to point out, which maybe get overlooked, that show some of his qualities. But before then, there's just a few takeaways that I noticed from just watching all the goals. Is one, how many he scored with his left foot. was staggering. I mean, I knew he had a great left foot, and I've seen, remember lots of goals he scored, but I think it's something like 51. The technique is incredible. Couldn't believe that. The fact that he doesn't seem to have aged in 11 years, apart from the odd bit of facial hair sort of appearing, then going, then reappearing, and a slick back haircut for a while. The fact that, you know, he's pretty much stuck to the same celebration, that sort of little jump and fist pump, compared to we all think of Alan Shearer, he was going to, you know, compared to many times now and has been already, as having that famous hand in the air. But Shearer once famously, well, at least to Newcastle fans, tried to change it up one time when he scored against his old club Blackburn. Can't remember what year it was, with this kind of strange bow and arrow celebration, which he then gave up the following goal. Clearly didn't stick with it, but Kane stuck with it the whole time. And then also just rewatching lockdown football, which sort of brought back memories of how, apart from being mildly interesting, being able to hear the players and managers for the first few games, really after a while, the novelty wore off and it was just grim not having fans there. But just watching so many goals he scored during that time, and the music that was played after every time Spurs scored in that period, with which was, I think, Darude Sandstorm coming on. You just can't try and create an atmosphere without supporters. But just a few of the goals that I noticed that showed a few things about Kane's game. One was back in the 14-15 season. It was at St. James's Park. It was a last-minute goal, I think, to go 3-0 up, and St. James's Park was mass exodus after this goal. But he was played through, and he showed real pace getting in behind the Newcastle backline. And I think a lot of people, particularly now, with the sort of recency bias of where he's at now at his age, they never really considered Kane to be a quick player. But I think back then he did show some real fleet of foot, and particularly in that game. There was a header against, I think, at Stoke in 17-18, where the hang time he had in the air was sort of Michael Jordan-esque. It was incredible. And then an absolutely sort of brilliantly well-timed connection. I mean, you think of that header against Arsenal, and that is the one that really stands out. But I really like that goal. And then finally, perhaps my pick of the bunch, albeit obviously not for the same occasion as an Arsenal game or the Chelsea or Borussia Dortmund, was Wolves away, I think, in the 18-19 season. He does this little Cruyff turn outside the box on the sort of right-hand side, and then fires this, again, back to his left foot, this unbelievable left-footed strike into the far corner. I think the keeper gets a little hand to it, but it doesn't, you know, even with that, it still looks absolutely beautiful the way he strikes it. And just an absolute peach of a goal. And those sort of three really summed up some of his many qualities that he's shown throughout this last 11 years.
So do you want to put one of those in the top five? Because we're going to have a lot of disagreements here. Is one of those getting a top five berth?
Oh, the first two, definitely not. The only one they were more examples of some of the things he can do. They're definitely not in his best goals. But I think that Wolves one is pretty spectacular. So I don't know whether it will make the top five, but I think
it's just made it. It's in fifth place. Now we're going to be picking this up as we go. Now, I'm going to just say straight away, for me, when I think of Kane goals, it's the curler against Arsenal. Do we all agree that that's got to get in the top five somewhere?
100%.
Yeah, that's definitely
it. Absolutely.
Curler.
I'll go in because I think the celebration, you know, like ripping the mask off, throwing it on the ground. I mean, that is peak Kane. I mean, the one thing I'll say about that game is just to say that Spurs didn't win the game. You know, I think part of the reason that goal was so incredible was that everyone thought they were going to go on and win the match. They'd scored two goals in 2 minutes, and they were 1-0 down, scored two goals in 2 minutes. Everyone thought, wow, what an incredible turnaround. And they went and conceded another one later on, and they ended up drawing it 2-2. So
don't spoil this, Tom, please.
It was a moment. But
I think you can go even bigger than that and say that it was almost a moment where Spurs looked like they might win the title, because they were, I think, going to leapfrog Leicester with a win in that game. So
the curler's moving down the list quickly here.
No, it's still a great goal, but I think part of the reason the reaction to it is so great, and that there's such good limbs in the stands, is that actually at the time it looked like a goal that could propel Spurs to the top of the league in March, with a huge win over their rivals and potentially lead to something really special. So, you know, obviously, knowing Spurs, they went and conceded.
Well, we knew that would happen. Well, so the Wolves goal is in fifth place. The curlers dropped down to fourth. Dan, what are you coming out with?
I really like, I've got a few. I mean, I really like the one he scored against Leicester when he was literally on the ground. He was kind of horizontal. Do people remember that?
Yeah, I do, yes.
I mean, I think you touched on it earlier, Marcus, but he's got lots of kind of 7.5 or 8 out of 10 goals that aren't necessarily spectacular, but they're just great pieces of kind of centre forward play, really clever play, a really intricate play, really good technique. I mean, that Leicester goal was just amazing because he'd been fouled, he was on the way down, he would have won a penalty, but he still managed to score. So I do like that one. I like the one he scored against Southampton where he burst between two players, beat Van Dijk to the ball and a really cool finish. And then we touched on it during the show, but the penalty against Liverpool in the last minute. I know it's a penalty. Can we have it in there?
No, it's in. It's in. That's number three. For all sorts of reasons. Yeah.
Also, you can't give me two chances to the camera just as he walked off.
Yeah, no, that's there. Okay, well, we're taking that one. And I mean, his performance, which included goals against Liverpool at Wembley a few years back. I mean, he was unplayable that day, as Jurgen Klopp admitted afterwards. So I'd like to give that sort of a reference in dispatches. But other Tom, we've still got two spots. We've still got one and two. So we need to be careful here. What are we looking at?
You have to have the header. There's no doubt about that. In my opinion, it's probably the standout number one.
The Arsenal header. Okay. Yeah. Okay. That's number one.
I think actually, I quite like Lucy. I mean, is this has to be a top five goals? Because I sort of think if it's for moments, I think scoring a hat trick and then going in goal.
That's my favorite.
To beat as a kind of career highlight. Yeah. So I would throw that in.
There we are. We've done it. We have done it. It's the goal against Wolves.
We're missing a big one, I think.
Dortmund.
Crystal Palace in the
That's 4-0. A big underrated one. Dortmund is underrated.
Dortmund. Which is the Crystal Palace one?
Is that the one where he, on the edge of the area, he just sweeps it in the top corner?
Well, he's it first time from the kind of right channel strike. And it goes in off the post and the left hand. It's a great finish.
There were no fans.
Fans. That's sixth. That's in sixth place.
What about the Everton one that he didn't actually mean to score in 2017? Yeah,
What about the one he nicked off Ericsson where he allegedly got a touch?
Well, we could go around in circles.
Marcus is desperate to wrap up the top five. That,
I'm afraid we could, otherwise we'll be here when he scored another 267 goals. I mean, the one against Dortmund was fantastic, but no, we've gone Wolves in fifth place, the curler against Arsenal in fourth, the penalty at Liverpool, don't give me two chances. I now can't read my writing, what the second one was.
Arsenal header?
That's the winner, the Arsenal header. What have I put in second
one in goal
place?
After scoring a hat-trick.
Oh, yes, the hat-trick. Oh, that's a mess. I thought it said Mikhailo Mudryk. I thought, why have I suddenly got Chelsea's new signing there? The hat-trick and going in goal. So there we are.
More shambolic than Hot Take Lane.
Yeah, that was really shambolic. I apologise.
Are we doing best assists now? Best Harry Kane?
Oh, my goodness.
50 assists?
We'll be here until the end of next season. But, I mean, it just goes to show everyone will have their moments. Everyone will have their memories. But there have been so many of them. And, well, we have now got to talk about his future, of course, because having got the record, will this have an effect on what he decides to do next? First things first, let's have a little flavour of what he had to say afterwards.
Have you got a top Spurs goal or a top three you could give us?
It's hard to say, really. I think a couple against Arsenal, I think, at that old White Hart Lane, my first North London derby, the header, the one where I bent in from the left and posting in. They're two that stick in my memory for sure. And then there's been some good ones over the years, but you know, that one today was right out there. Just the atmosphere and, you know, the occasion was just a special goal and a special night to get the 3 points as well.
And 200 Premier League goals as well. Is it Shearer's record, presumably next target?
Well, I'm sure you guys will be talking about that. And of course, it's there in the back of my mind, but just taking it, you know, game by game, season by season, it's definitely there to be broken. And, you know, I'm feeling good, I'm feeling fit. So we'll see what happens, you know. I'll enjoy this night tonight and then just full focus on to Saturday against Leicester.
You're the only player to reach 200, Rooney and Shearer, the others, to have done it for one club. You know, would it be even more special if you did it just with Spurs?
Yeah, no, it's been an amazing journey. You know, I've been here since I was 11 years old. It's 18 years of my life. So, a lot of hard work and dedication, and I'm extremely proud to represent this club and to score 267 goals for them and 200 Premier League goals for them is something I'll never take for granted. So I've just got to keep it going, trying to score as many as I can, and then see what happens.
Yeah, a little flavour of what he had to say immediately afterwards. Tom B was there, Dan was there as well, we heard his voice, and of course everyone's now talking about the Shearer record. He's on track because clearly he's got to 200 in two games less than Shearer. If he doesn't get injured, Dan, is it now a certainty that he's going to break the record, do you think?
Unless he goes overseas, which I don't think he will, but I think he'll break the record quite comfortably, yeah. I mean, the first thing is he seems to have moved away from the injuries that were kind of hampering him a few years ago. He's talked about kind of working with a new Spanish physio and feeling fitter than he ever has. And I don't think he's been injured, touch wood, since New Year's Day 2020. I think I'm right, when he pulled his hamstring against Southampton. So he's kind of over 3 years injury free. And the other thing is, I think players just go on longer nowadays than they did in Shearer's day. And I think Kane looks after himself so well, as such a model pro. He could easily be playing at the top level until he's 35, 36. You look at Zlatan Ibrahimovic playing, winning titles for AC Milan into his 40s. There's no reason, honestly, that Kane couldn't do something similar, particularly given that he has adapted his game so well to kind of drop back and not be so explosive. So, unless he moves to a different league or goes to play NFL or something or takes up golf, then I really think he's going to do it quite comfortably.
Well, we've had Gareth Bale taking up golf. I don't have anyone else from Spurs taking up golf. But if he does go on for that long, you'd think maybe not just beating Shearer's record, he could get to 300. Let's just remember, by the way, that Jimmy Greaves still holds the record for the most top flight goals, 357 during his time at Chelsea, Spurs and West Ham. And he scored a few in Italy as well. So I think that's probably asking a little bit.
Probably too much. Too much to ask.
Comparisons are odious. I heard Michael Richards earlier on saying that he thinks that both Shearer and Rooney are better players than Harry Kane is or ever will be. I'm not sure quite what he bases that on. And when I watch Kane these days, and the fact that not only is he a great goal scorer, but you know he assists so many goals as well. He can go deep in all the rest of it. I was surprised to hear that. I don't know what the two Toms would have to say in terms of those comparisons.
Well, I don't know if it was as definitive as ever will be, but I think he did sort of pick Shearer and Rooney over it, but it was more just personal preference. I mean, I think Shearer is more of an obvious comparison because they're more similar than Rooney was in the way that Kane plays, although you could argue he's almost a hybrid of the two, Shearer and Rooney, really. I think Dan, you know, talks about his injuries, Kane. With Shearer, Kane's, even though he's had injury problems before, he's never had anything like what Shearer had to put up with you know, doing his ACL back before he even won the title with Blackburn, a serious knee injury with Newcastle. So in a way, that's in Shearer's favour that he still managed to become such a great player going through those kind of injury problems. But then on the other side of it, is the game harder now? Is there more competition than it was back then? So is Kane playing in a more difficult era? I don't know. I mean, Shearer was... It's interesting, back to what I was saying about between Rooney and Shearer, and often people talk about Kane being the best of Shearer and Sheringham. I do think people sort of overlook what a great creator Shearer was, particularly back in when he had his pace back when he was in his Blackburn days. He wasn't just the kind of centre forward that's held the ball up and, you know, lethal finisher like he was towards the end of his career, probably because of those injuries. He was a much better player than some people might remember. And obviously probably more physical than Kane has been in the air and just about the pitch. But then having, again, watched that compilation earlier, Kane really does have it all. He's got, and that wasn't even including the, I think, 62 assists he's made for Spurs. So when you think about a complete player, who does have that physicality, maybe not quite the same as Shearer, but he's got that finishing off both feet, header, everything you can ask for. It's hard to think that anyone in the Premier League era has been a more complete player than Harry Kane.
And Lucy, just from a fan's perspective, obviously there was that period a year or two ago when it looked as though he would leave the club and he was strongly linked with Manchester City. I've spoken to a lot of fans and I get the sense that if he was to leave, and maybe there's more chance of that now because he's beaten Jimmy Greaves' record, nobody would really blame him because they feel that a player of Harry Kane's ability should win silverware. Not that there's any guarantee he would win silverware if he went anywhere else, but was there any sense that you felt betrayed when it sounded as though he was going to go a couple of years ago? And if he was to leave at the end of this season, would you condemn him for that or would you understand it?
I think our attitudes have changed. I think at the time we were really upset about it. But now you're right, we want him to win something. I mean, he's the quickest player to reach 20 Champions League goals as well. He didn't mention that against Shearer and what's his face. So there you go. He's beaten Messi and he's beaten Ronaldo to that. So listen, he needs to win stuff. And I just feel like he should. I'm so pleased he didn't take the easy option of going to City, because that would have felt difficult. I find it hard watching Kyle Walker win stuff. You know, Kieran Trippier might even win something as well now he's with Newcastle. So I don't think I'd be upset now. I would be upset, but I wouldn't be as upset if he left now. But something yesterday, I felt like he was really pressured to get this goal. And I'm thinking, why are you so pressured if you're staying with us? You're going to get it, aren't you? So whether it was a pressure that he wanted to do it in front of the home fans, whether it was pressure that he wanted to do it with a win, as you mentioned earlier, I really don't know what to say. I'll be upset, but I think, we said earlier, top five. We're in the fifth round of the FA Cup. We're in the last 16 in the Champions League. He's got a chance. And the other thing I want to say is, I don't feel sorry for him, because he has had an opportunity to win things with Spurs. We're in the Champions League final and he didn't step up. Yes, okay, he just came back from an injury. We're in the Tin Cup final only a few years ago. He still didn't win that one. So I think he has had opportunities to win. The same with England. And I don't know. I kind of feel sorry for him in a way, but I kind of don't as well at the same time, because he has had it within grasping distance. Do you agree, guys?
I think that's a fair point. I think it's a fair point.
Well, the other thing I would say here, guys, is that we'd like to think that if he was going to leave and wants to stay in England, he wouldn't go to Arsenal and he wouldn't go to Chelsea. So that then leaves him with Liverpool, Manchester United, Manchester City. Well, the way Liverpool are at the moment, you've got no guarantee you're going to win anything there. Well, City, while they've got Haaland, I don't suppose that's an option. So, okay, Manchester United's maybe your best bet. But there's no guarantee, is there? If he's leaving purely to win silverware at this stage in his career with Spurs on the up, would that not be perhaps the wrong option? I don't know, but there are no guarantees. And would it mean as much to him even if he did? I don't know. Dan?
Yeah, I mean, I think there are no guarantees. I think a lot depends on how Spurs perform in the second half of the season. I think Kane has always said that he is happy to stay at Spurs if they are progressing, moving forward and challenging for the trophies he wants. And almost a few weeks ago, it was kind of very hard to say that they were doing either of those things. But then suddenly, as we've discussed, the FA Cup's opening up a bit, AC Milan are the crisis club in Italy, so the Champions League draws looking promising for Spurs. They're well in the mix for the top four and things are looking up. So the situation can change very quickly. And I think, as you touched on, the other thing to say is he obviously wants to stay in the Premier League and break Shearer's record. That, for me, is bigger than winning a league title, by the way. Whenever Shearer comes on Match of the Day, what does it say under his name? It says record Premier League scorer. It doesn't say won Premier League title with Blackburn. It's a bigger honour. It's a huge honour to be the top scorer. He wants that, and I think he'll stay in the country. And then the question is, will he have a suitor if he decides or is veering toward leaving Spurs? United are the obvious ones, but they're actually playing a very kind of progressive type of football under Ten Hag. Is Kane going to be able to press in the way that Ten Hag wants? For instance, does Richard Arnold fancy dealing with Daniel Levy for a summer when he could go and buy the hottest property in Europe for 80-odd million? I doubt it. So I could easily see a scenario where actually Kane doesn't have many offers in England beyond Spurs and the best choice for him. And again, if things continue on an upward trajectory, I think, it might not be a case of having offers. It might be a case of thinking, well, Spurs are rebuilding promisingly here. They're back on the up. They've kind of got over the hump, the post-Pochettino hump. And there's every chance, as much chance of winning a trophy here as anywhere else.
Yeah, well, I don't want to tempt fate, but I do feel it in my bones. Spurs are going to win the FA Cup this season, guys.
But I think the most important thing here is, and he actually mentioned it to Gary Neville when they played that round of golf together. He said, I'm at the prime of my life. I've worked so hard to get here and I'm sitting at home watching the Champions League and I'm not in it. And I think if we don't get Champions League, I think that is the only thing that's going to make him go. I really do. And he's right. He's worked so hard to get to the ultimate shape. And then he's not playing at the top level. That's the only thing that's going to make him leave, but we don't get Champions League.
Well, he did very well in the Conference League, though, guys, didn't he? He liked the Conference League. He got that hat-trick in the Conference League. He felt,
and the Audi Cup.
And the Audi Cup, yeah. Doesn't matter to him.
Not to put a dampener on it, but I think just because if he doesn't have a suitable offer this summer doesn't necessarily, he doesn't mean he'll sign a new contract. I mean, it's looking very encouraging at the moment, but personally, I think if he is to leave, it's probably more likely on a free transfer the following season. You did leave out Newcastle, by the way, as a potential option, maybe not this summer, but going forward. And I guess part of, as Dan points out, he's always wanted to, you know, he's prioritised Spurs winning, being in the mix for winning trophies, and that's always been his priority. But I do wonder, you know, whether there's any element of that so-called gentleman's agreement he thinks he had with Daniel Levy back a couple of years ago not happening. You know, as long as he's moved past that, and there isn't any sort of ill feeling on that front, then yeah, that all looks positive.
What about someone buying him, though? Are they going to get a return for their money? Is someone going to spend £100 million on him? Do you know what I mean?
No, I think that's a very good point. I wouldn't be surprised, like you said, if there wasn't the right offer this summer. But let's just not get ahead of ourselves with the fact that that doesn't necessarily mean that for the long term, he's definitely going to sign a new contract. But things are definitely looking more positive.
Yeah, let's stay positive at this stage. And let me just quickly, by the way, in terms of the Tottenham leading scorers, because there are some great names at the top of this list, but we know Kane now, 267 from 416. Greaves, 266 from 379. Bobby Smith in third place, 208 goals from 317 appearances. Great Martin Chivers, 174 from 367. Cliff Jones, who's still going strong, 159 goals in 378. Jermaine Defoe, I was actually surprised that he's in sixth place, 143 from 362. And Sonny, well, he's got 139 at the moment. Hang in there, Sonny. I mean, you're sort of more than halfway towards catching Harry. If Harry goes, we could have this podcast about Sonny in 4 or 5 years. I may be getting slightly carried away. And George Hunt, who I never did see play, but he scored 138 goals in 198 games. That was a terrific ratio. Right. The final question here, have we got a hot take lane, Dan?
No.
Oh, I can hear the groans all around the country.
Joy in the Spurs press office.
They've turned the screw. They've been messaging me throughout the show saying it can't happen.
Well, ever again or just tonight?
No, it'll be back next week.
Okay,
next week.
Excellent.
I don't bow to the press office. No. I do.
I think we're all secretly quite relieved, as well as the press office and the hierarchy of the club. Well, in that case, that is it for our Harry Kane special. But what a special player he is, what a special game it was, and hopefully what a special end to the season we're going to have too. Dan Kilpatrick, thank you very much indeed. Tom Allnut, Tom Barkley, Lucy Jones, Paul Coit, and also to Richard Brush, the very first goalkeeper to be beaten by Harry Kane in Tottenham colours. Thank you for listening. Please do give us a review on iTunes or Apple Podcast. We're on Twitter at the Tottenham Way. We are eventually going to be on TikTok as well, as we embrace the modern age. But for now, from me, Marcus Buckland, and all the team, it's goodbye and come on, you Spurs.